This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. All this week, we're profiling the candidates who've thrown their hats into the ring for the state's top two jobs. We are hearing from the major party challengers for governor and lieutenant governor. Voters will have to decide who they want to represent them when they go to the polls for the August primary. Later this hour, we're going to talk with H. Brooke Page, who's running as a Democrat for both governor and for attorney general. If you have questions for him, you can post them now at vpr.net. But in the first half of the show, we're going to get to know Steve Barry. The 72-year-old from Woolcott has never entered a political race, and this is a big one to jump into. But he says it's time for a change. According to his campaign announcement, his key issues are getting rid of the Common Core educational standards, moving away from single-payer health care, fixing Vermont's roads, and eliminating the bottle bill. We'll go deeper into some of those issues now with Steve Barry. Steve, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you.
For many people, this is the first time they'll be hearing from you and about you. So give us just the briefest summary of the most important things that you want voters to know about who you are.
Well, as a grandfather of 19 grandchildren, and being in Vermont for 37 years, I just have seen the erosion of our freedoms here in Vermont. And I just felt that I should step forward and do this. I am the Vermont, the Lamoille County Finance Chair for the Republican Party, living in Woolcott. And I have been watching and waiting for somebody to step forward from the Vermont Republican Party. And there was word out that Randy Brock was hinting on it, but then at the last minute decided not to. And that is when I decided to, just a week before my petition was were called for, I just decided to step in and do something.
Now, you mentioned that you are the finance chair for the Vermont GOP, or for the Lamoille County Republicans.
Yes.
You also volunteered on John McGovern's campaign for U.S. Senate in 2012, but why run for governor? Why not work behind the scenes? This is a big race to step into.
Oh, it is. And I have worked behind the scenes with helping with John McGovern. I crisscrossed the state setting up meetings with farmers so John could go and visit and listen to the farmers. And I've also spent 25 years actually crisscrossing the whole New England, selling paintings to Vermonters and watching how the farming industry has just slowly gone away. And I just believe that was the end of a free country where independence meant everything. And if you just look around, one big farm now replaces up to 40 small farms. If you do the numbers on that, say the average farmer had six in a family, times 40, that's 240 people that are no longer contributing to the economy versus one family.
Well, no longer contributing to the economy as individual farm families.
Well, that's it. You see, you got to spread wealth that way. And that's the way I believe it should be. I mean, everybody loves to have local food. We all love it. But that we're losing that.
So you support a return to smaller family farms? What about diversified agriculture?
I've written about it. I've actually wrote a farm bill back in 2009. It's called Steve's Bill. But I spent a whole summer up in Aroostook County and that whole potato industry.
That's up in Maine.
Absolutely, yes. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
And, stepping into Aroostook County is like going back into the 50s. It's just a beautiful area there. But also, the potato industry is being taken over by China and Canada and big corporations and... And again, it's the same numbers, where all of these small families were thriving on that market is now gone. But the bottom line is, we all want local foods. And I believe that we should honor the small family farm. And I'm also an advocate for the small businessman. You take Vermont itself as nationwide, I think it's around 70% of all employers have 50 employees and under. Now, this, of course, they have no representation. Vermont has around 70%. And this is what I want to jump in and represent them in Montpelier. They are overtaxed, overburdened with too many regulations from the EPA and so on and so forth. What we have right now is a progressive movement that has taken over Vermont politics. And they're not looking out for the small guy. I want to.
We're talking right now with Steve Barry. He's a Republican challenger for governor. If you hear yourself in his words or if you want to question him pointedly, either way, our number is 1-800-639-2211. You can also post questions for Steve Barry on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Steve Barry, let's get into one of the issues that you've said you're really going to work hard on as you campaign for governor. You want to pull the plug on the state's single-payer health care plan. Why, and what do you think we should do instead?
Well, first of all, Mr. Shumlin has yet to come up with where we're going to find the money. That's the first thing. But the second thing, me as a senior citizen, and listen to me, folks out there, everybody over 65, pay attention. There is no money there for you if you have any serious problems. Now, we all, like myself, I've always relied on personal responsibility. So I have taken care of myself. At 72, going on 73, I'm probably healthier than most people at 50. And that is because I do everything in moderation. But that's not the problem. That's me alone. But we have so many elderly people that are smokers. These people are going to have the plug pulled on them because there's no money for them available with single health care. Just look at what's happening with the VA. Right now, 70% of all VA hospitals in this country, there's a 90-day waiting list. This is single payer. The government owns the hospitals. They hire the doctors. They hire the nurses. This is exactly what Mr. Shumlin wants to shove down our throats. And that is what I'm one of the main reasons why I step forward and say it. I've got to try to tell people this is what's happening. Now, look.
When you say there's no money for senior citizens for health care, what do you mean by that? What about Medicare?
Well, look, Medicare, and I'm on it. But listen, single payer means everyone's going to be on Medicare.
But are you not being able to get treatment through Medicare to have that paid for?
At the present, yes, I am. But of course, all I need is a yearly physical, ma'am. I don't have these problems that are coming down the road with other people with lungs failing from too much smoking or livers because of too much drinking. I know this is personal choices that we all make, but it is a problem. And believe me, they pay taxes up the yin-yang for these habits that they have. You take the average smoker. If you took all the money that they put into the taxes over the period of 50 years— I mean, there should be plenty of money there for them going forward, but they don't use that money in that case. They throw it into the general fund, and, you know, it's just put on the social engineering programs. And it's, go ahead, ask me another question.
Well, let's take a quick break, and I do have more questions for you. And listeners, if you have a question for Steve Barry, he's running for governor as a Republican, now's the time to call 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your questions at vpr.net by clicking on Vermont Edition. More with Steve Barry coming right up. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We're speaking with major party challengers for governor and lieutenant governor this week. Right now, we're hearing from Steve Barry. The 72-year-old retired salesman is running as a Republican for the state's top job. Later on in the program, we're going to talk with Brooke Page, who's running as a Democrat. If you have questions for Mr. Barry, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your questions on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's talk briefly about education, because that is another one of the issues that you have said is going to be a priority for you in this campaign. I understand that you're frustrated with the Common Core educational standards.
Oh, absolutely. 19 grandchildren. Listen, Common Core is this. It's federal education without representation.
But Common Core is implemented by the states, not the federal government.
Look, the arm of the federal government through the National Education Association is linked. And I believe they're going to have a massive database that's going to be monitoring everything our child does. And what is going to really happen is they're going to abolish the school boards. I mean, they may have them there as symbols. But do you think a school board is going to have any input in how our children are going to be raised? I doubt it. Not with a bureaucrat controlling it. It's like anything. Getting back to healthcare, it's a bureaucrat controlling everything that we do.
Vermont, so who do you think is controlling the Common Core and the educational standards? I just want to be clear on who's the bureaucrat you're talking about in this case?
A bureaucrat? I can't pinpoint one. But it's the National Education Association that's involved with most of this.
So you don't like
right
that
now,
union?
Excuse me, ma'am.
Sure.
Don't interrupt.
I'm just trying to be
right
clear
now,
on what you're saying.
Right now, there is a dozen or even more states that are backing out of Common Core simply because of this massive takeover of the public school system. I mean, the sugar is that they're finally starting to teach them math and English. Why weren't they doing that before? Why do we have to have some big agency controlling what we should be doing already? Look, there's nothing. Our teachers in the school system are great individuals, and they all want to be able to teach, but they can't be when they're controlled by another entity someplace else. And I believe that our school system should be held with free market. A free market to system. There's nothing. What's it cost? $12,000 to $15,000 today to send a kid through school that costs the taxpayers, which most of it comes out of the real estate taxes. Why can't we take that $12,000 or $15,000 and give it to in a voucher to the parent and let the parent decide where his child will go, his or her?
So you'd like to see an expansion
of school
choice.
The private sector, yes, charter schools, parochial, and the public schools. Let them all compete against each other. Listen, excellence breeds, back up, competition breeds excellence every time it is tried. But you throw a government program in there, you eliminate it because it's all one size fits all. It doesn't work. It's been proven over and over and over. Socialism cannot work.
So how would you control spiraling school costs?
Again, competition will break that up. Listen, you give it to the private sector and it costs you a third of what it does. Look at, I mean, right in the Lamoille County area. What is the superintendent of the schools has 18 employees in that office, and it's costing them close to $2 million for that entity. Why do we need that? Please explain to me, why do we need that entity? A superintendent with 19 employees have $2 million budget every year. Give me a break.
So school consolidation and school board consolidation and elimination of some superintendents, are those all things that you would support if the free market led the
direction?
Listen,
we need guidelines. We don't need control. There's a difference. We all need – the government should be set up in guidelines. That's like what I would do if I ever became governor, like it's a David and Goliath scenario. But my point is I want to make people aware of what they're getting into. I mean, we're already in deep crap. I'm trying to show some light on this.
But school consolidation is a big political hot potato right now. So where do you come down on that?
I just got through telling you that.
I'm not clear on it. Do you support the consolidation of schools?
Oh, absolutely not. Consolidation, why should one kid be trucked all the way 30, 40 miles away when they got a school right there? Look at how many school houses being closed because of that consolidation.
So
who is that helping?
If school choice and vouchers led to some schools not having enough students to continue because parents would be allowed to send their children to the school of their choice, is that something that's okay with you if a school has to close for that reason?
As long as the private sector is in the loop, charter schools are in the loop, and Christian schools are in the loop, then everybody has the same guidelines and let them have at it.
Let me ask you about another issue that you put in your campaign announcement. You don't like the bottle bill. So what's your beef with the bottle bill?
Well, the bottle bill is, look, I remember when that happened. I can't put my finger on exactly the politician that come up with his infinite wisdom that we... You see, look, this state was loaded with small mom-and-pop stores throughout the whole state. In fact, it was the bread and butter of all of these little small villages. When you take and buy a bottle of soda or anything that has a deposit on it, 20% of that money never leaves the store. Just because of broken, lost, whatever. But it's a good solid 20% that stays within that little store. That allows that store owner to advance, get bigger, hire on people. But some politician decided they could do better with that money and throw it into the general fund for social engineering programs. Come on. Now look what's happened. Now we have Jollies. We have Cumberland Farms. There's two or three others that are major big business that most of this money is being shipped out of Vermont. And slowly but surely, all of these little small mom-and-pop stores have vanished. And that is something that I would like to try to bring back into the mix.
And you think repealing the bottle bill would help with that, even though that's a tax on top of the cost of the alcohol and sodas?
Again, ma'am, that's something else that the private sector should be handling is the liquor control. Why should the government be in control of liquor? We're over 21. We know. You see, the problem with government, they don't trust the private sector to do anything. But you're wrong. This country was built on eighth graders, for one, and we should stick to that. The common sense person can do far better than any bureaucrat you want to lay out to me. And that's what I am. I'm a common guy.
Well, Steve Barry, we have about 30 seconds left, and I'd love to hear, you know, take us to January 15th. You're making your inauguration speech at the State House as the new governor of Vermont. What would you say to the legislature? What would your address be?
Very simple again. Look, I want to be a referee. I do not want to have the power and control over the people. That's all we need is a referee. I don't know how else to put it, ma'am, but we have too much regulations going on in this small little state that was built on independence. But that word now is a bad word. I want to change that, and I want to reach out to the 40% of uninformed people in this state that are not paying attention due to a progressive media that won't tell the truth to the people.
Well, Steve Barry is running for governor as a Republican in the August primary. He's told you a little bit about his campaign priorities. Steve Barry, thank you for speaking with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Coming up, we're going to talk with Democratic candidate for Governor Brooke Page. If you have questions for Page about why he has switched party affiliation or how he would shape the state's priorities, write to vermontedition@vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. Brooke Page coming up next on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Brooke Page is a retired businessman who lives in the town of Washington. For 25 years, he ran a newsstand and coffee shop in a train station in a Philadelphia suburb and commuted back to Vermont on weekends. In 2012, he ran as a Republican trying to defeat Bernie Sanders for U.S. Senate. But his bid was stopped early when he was defeated in the primary by John McGovern. This time around, Page has decided to run as a Democrat, and he has filed for candidacy in two races, Attorney General and Governor. His dual bids were sanctioned by the Secretary of State's office last Friday. Page does not support Peter Shumlin's push for single-payer health care, and he's opposed to the Common Core educational standards being implemented by the state. We're going to talk about those and more now as we get to know the candidate and the candidacy of H. Brooke Page. And listeners, you can ask him a question by calling 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or by posting at vpr.net. Brooke Page, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
It's good to be here and good to be with your listeners as well.
I mentioned single-payer health care is one of the issues that you're going to be focusing on, and you don't like the trajectory the state is on heading towards single-payer health care. So what would you suggest?
Well, I view our interpretation of single-payer here as being on a doomed aircraft, with Mr. Shumlin having locked himself in the cockpit, and as the one wing is breaking off and the other engine is in flames, he makes the announcement, "Don't worry, folks, we'll be to the destination soon," which is obviously the crash site. You know, everybody wants to have roses and potpourri, and making this thing look like it's something worthwhile. And in the end, it's just going to be devastating. What one thing people don't understand is single payer will eventually become single provider. And, you know, it makes no sense that we have all of these different individual private sector providers providing if there's only one paying source. And unfortunately, that would mean a lot of consolidation of hospitals. Smaller rural hospitals will be closed because the state will be looking for more and more efficiency. Also, you'll shortly see triaging of services where the state will look in and they'll have a specific budget that they have to spend for the year. They will then look at the list of services or procedures that need to be provided and will make a cost-benefit analysis. And certain services will just be seen as not being effective. And so if you need a hip and you're 85, you know, as Mr. Obama told us, maybe we'll just give you the blue pain pill and send you home. And that's exactly what single payer is all about.
Don't insurance companies already do that cost-benefit analysis and sometimes say, we will not cover this procedure that you, the patient, may think is necessary, but that we, the insurance company, have deemed unnecessary?
Necessary if they don't believe that it's going to be curative. You know, I mean, if you, regardless of your age or your circumstances, you know, if you have a bad hip and you can't walk around, nobody says, "Oh, you can't have the hip right now." You wind up getting the hip or heart surgery or whatever. Nobody's going to the 85-year-old person unless they can't survive the procedure. That you're not allowed to have these, you know, have these procedures done.
And you think the government would say that we will not give you this curative procedure?
We saw this. I guess it's about 10 years ago now. Washington and Oregon State took over their Medicaid program, and within a year or two, they were triaging services just as in the example that I've just given. And they just looked, here's the money we have, here's what we can buy for that money, and anybody who has more complicated or more expensive procedures that are beyond the limit of our budget just can't get them.
So you see that in other countries that have single-payer health care or that have government health care. When you look at Canada, when you look at the United Kingdom and other countries, you think those systems are what, not successful?
I think Canada is a very good example because you're allowed to have the procedure, but you're put on such a long wait list that you don't survive the wait list. In the similar problems that we're having at the VA right now, which is really a triage, and unfortunately, that's for a totally different reason. Apparently, that's to benefit the administrators to allow them to get giant bonuses, which is even, you know, more absurd and sad and almost criminal, I think. But take Canada. There's many people from Canada who are on wait lists. And the wait list is such that they're never going to make it. They'll be dead before they make it. And they come down. And a lot of these people wind up at Fletcher Allen here in Vermont. And Fletcher Allen has to make payment arrangements and financing so these folks can be treated. So it's not something far away down in, you know. And the other thing that, you know, we keep talking about, we have a healthcare crisis. We do not have a healthcare crisis in this country. We have the best healthcare in the world. When you hear about some tin horn dictator from South America or some Russian, proletariat has some serious illness, they don't go down to Havana or to Moscow. They come to New York. They come to Baltimore. They go to the Cleveland Clinic. They get treated. We have the best health care in the world. What we have a small problem with is health care financing, which affects about 10 to 20% of the population. It affected about that amount here in Vermont. The problem was that as we started to implement Vermont Healthcare Connect and all of the intricacies of this program, we now have twice as many people uninsured as we had before the whole thing started, and far more complicated and worse healthcare. I have people who used to love to be on Catamount Care, have their kids on Dr. Dinosaur, the small business providers that were on VACE, which was administered by the State Chamber of Commerce and sold through the local Chamber of Commerces. And this was basically that they were forming a large group out of small groups for small employers, and it was administered through Better Business, or not for the Better Business, Chamber of Commerce.
So you'd go back to that? You'd go back to the state system that we had before?
I think what we had before is far better than where we're heading. I mean, I talked to my personal physicians, my cardiologist, my orthopedic surgeon. They're all being warned by their groups that they belong to, their professional groups, to get licenses in other states because this thing is going to blow up.
Well, let me just ask you very quickly, and then I want to move on to other topics.
Sure.
So what would you do as governor? You said that you do believe there's a financing problem. So what would you do?
I think that we need to You can never put the Barbasol back in the can. Okay, you can never put the shaving cream back in the can. But I think that if we reset ourselves to where we were before we started to implement all of this, it improves our situation. I think then we isolate and we identify those people who are in need, and we get them onto Dr. Dinosaur. We get them onto Catamount Care, it's my understanding that Blue Cross and Blue Shield and the Chamber believe that within 90 to 120 days they could have these programs completely reconstituted and have everybody back in place. Then we identify the people that have a problem, and maybe the state has to provide additional resources to make sure all those people are insured. I think everybody who is a true Vermonter, somebody that actually lives here, that's a citizen of the state, should be able to get adequate health care. Okay, but you don't do it this way. You don't do it, and the single payer whole concept is fraudulent, because when they implement it, they're going, oh, well, the state employees won't be on, the state teachers union folks won't be on, through ERISA, all the big employers won't be on. And to be real honest, I'm in it right now because my wife works for a small company. Matter of fact, she's the HR person for the small company, and she's gone through all of this Vermont Connect hell, and they can't even if somebody gets married or has a baby, they can't even correct the records right now in order to get the thing straightened up, and nobody knows what they have. I had a waitress at the Wayside Inn the other day was waiting on me, and she said, oh, I used to be on Catamount Care. I used to love it. It was the best. She says, I thought I had been put on Medicaid. And here I went, and I went to the hospital. I now have a $1,000 bill because I have no insurance at all. And she didn't even know it.
We're talking right now with Brooke Page. He's running for governor as a Democrat. He's also running on the Democratic ticket for attorney general. If you have a question for him, our number is 1-800-639-2211. John is calling in from Burlington. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Page.
Yes, just Brooke will do just fine. Thank you.
Okay, Brooke, a wolf in sheep's clothing is still a wolf. And a Republican in Democratic clothing is still a Republican in Democratic clothing is still a Republican. Could you tell me one aspect where you differ from the Republican Party in the state of Vermont on one major issue?
You want the best one?
Go ahead.
Okay. I believe in the legalization and commercialization of marijuana as being the best path to reduce drug use, real drug use, in this state and in the nation. I can be more specific if you like.
Well, why are you running as a Democrat? You've run as a Republican in the past. Do you align yourself with any big D Democrat?
I'll be real honest. When I was running 2 years ago for the U.S. Senate, everybody I talked to, the progressives would say, you're really a progressive. The libertarians would go, you have all these libertarian views. What are you doing? I had Democrats that said, how can you be a Republican? You're a Democrat. And of course, I had Republicans that said, you're not much of a Republican. I think back there's a fellow running a couple years ago, Teague Tillinghouse, who they were trying to talk into running against Mark McDonald. And he had the best thing. He had come up from Massachusetts. He was a Republican. He came up here and was so poorly treated by the Republican Party, he identified himself with the Democrats. And I think that was more on the county level rather than the state level. And so Teague, they were trying to solicit him to run in the primary against Mark McDonald. And he decided not to. And I had actually been involved in chatting with him about that. And he had an excellent thing. And maybe it applies to me as well. He says, here in Vermont, I'm not a good Democrat, nor am I a good Republican. You know, I just know what I stand for. And I guess I'm really the same way. We get so much about the D's and the R's and the P's and the L's here in Vermont, we don't bother to look at the person or look at what the person stands for. And the reason I switched party is because I realized that the Republican Party's brand, its franchise, has been so sullied to some extent through their own actions, but more importantly through the press and through the Democrats piling on, that to be a Republican today is to be against feeding little children. You want to pollute every stream. You want to make sure you get lots of smog into the air. Just endless. You know, they're all about the 1%. I know a lot of Republicans, and none of them fit that definition, and I certainly don't. And I'm tired of people hanging the crepe on me. And maybe part of it, you know, a lot of the things the Democrats stand for, I certainly stand for. And if I've decided to change my party affiliation, I would think they'd welcome me and embrace me. I haven't seen much of that yet.
Well, but if it's pragmatic for you, you know, you're running against an incumbent. So if it's a pragmatic approach that you're going for to get your name out there, why run against an incumbent? Why not run, you know, as a Republican and hope to win in the primary so that then you can go up against him in the general election?
For the reason I just spoke out about, there are so many people. When I was out getting my petition drive, people would look at my petition. They'd say, oh, what do you stand for? They'd look at the petition and say, oh, a Democrat. I'll sign that. I had many of my Republican friends who know me say, oh, my God, you're running as a Democrat. I won't sign that, you know? And like I say, it's so much about the game rather than getting the results. The reason
For the results, do you see a path to victory?
I see a path to victory. And here's my path to victory. I'm giving away my big secret here, not for the first time. I believe that about a third of the Democrats are quietly disgusted with all of the chaos that Pete Shumlin's, you know, involved in. And I have a whole page full of things we could talk about. I believe that many of them don't want to speak out because they just don't want to be excoriated. I think that the Republican races, the two challenging races that are up this time, the governor's race where Steve Barry and Emily Payton and Scotty Milne are running. You know, I think Emily in the end is just wants to get in debate so bad that she was willing to do just about anything. She's filed as an independent also, so she'll be in the final mix regardless. And Steve's a wonderful guy. I've known him from back when he was campaigning against me when he was helping out John McGovern. He's a good fellow. He's good ideas. Most of the Democrats are good fellows or good gals and have good ideas, you know. And the thing is, we have to take the mix and come up with the good ideas. So I believe that many Republicans may see that it's more important to grab a Democratic ballot and possibly rid themselves of both Mr. Shumlin and Mr. Sorrell. Additionally, there are lots and lots of progressives and libertarians who don't have any skin in the game in the primary for the most part, who might decide that having me in the executive office rather than having Mr. Shumlin might be a good idea, or at least to have Mr. Shumlin out of the picture. Maybe in the election they'll see Scotty Milne or Steve Barry or Emily Payton as being a better choice than me. But the first step in any of those folks winning is eliminating Mr. Shumlin in the primary.
I'm talking with Brooke Page. She's running as a Democrat for governor and for attorney general. Let's talk about another issue that you'll be focused on in the campaign, energy. There's been a lot of talk lately about the state's energy plan and controversy over how we actually implement that and what kinds of resources we use. And whether it comes to ridgeline wind, to large-scale solar, to natural gas, there are controversies about all of them. What would your portfolio look like for a state energy plan?
Okay. Mr. Shumlin has said that by, I think it's 2050, we want to be 90% renewables. And that might be an acceptable goal. Okay. The problem is that you don't start 35 years in advance and pile all your resources and all your expenditures into technologies that are just beginning to evolve. I mean, hydronic solar has been around for a long time. It's a fully matured technology. This is water-based, where you're heating water and then using that either to heat your home or to heat the hot water in your home. It's highly effective, efficient. But photovoltaic, or solar energy that creates electricity, is just in its infancy. We've seen Mr. Obama's investment in Solyndra go up in smoke. I think it was $500 million, if I remember correctly, because by the time they got the plant built to build the solar panels, the Chinese were building ones that were four times as effective for half the price. Well, the same problem is if you're out buying these solar panels right now, that 5 years from now, the technology, these great big, what a friend of mine calls the black billboards that they're putting all over the state, these giant fields of solar panels will be just obsolete. You'll be able to do the thing in a quarter of the space. Better than that, there's technologies coming along today where roofing shingles will actually be solar panels. So you won't even have structures that are having to be hung on the house. It'll actually be the roofing itself.
So what would you do then if you start in 2015? You know, if those technologies are a ways out, what would your plan look like?
I think the first thing we've done, and we've done it to a large extent, is to maximize insulation and insulating homes, insulating factories. I think now that LED light bulbs have come on, that this is a wonderful thing to reduce technology. Unfortunately, we're sold the bill of goods of what I like to call the curly fry light bulbs, the CFLs, which had all sorts of inherent dangers in them, from having toxic mercury inside if you break them, to overheating and potentially catching fire, to emitting UV light radiation that can cause eye injury and skin melanomas. But I mean, there are technologies and things we can do right now, and we just wait a little while to advance until the technology advances, so it's economically effective without having to pour thousands and millions of dollars of state resources in to prop them up.
Natural gas supportive?
Natural gas is not a problem. I think that natural gas is certainly more or less polluting than fuel oil that's currently being used. And I think even when you talk about International Paper having the pipeline run over there, all the wind from the production at International Paper blows across the lake, and we get that. So if the air that they're producing is far cleaner, what the heck? Ridgeline wind, I think, is insane. There's so many problems, everything from putting foundations so deep into the ground that you wind up cracking into the aquifer. And then these are big machines. They leak all sorts of oils and things. They kill birds. They kill bats. They create all sorts of problems for folks that live around them as far as wind turbine syndrome. And for years, they didn't deny that this was even a problem for the folks that live. Not only the folks, but now I'm reading reports that all mammals and fish and reptiles are affected by it. So, and this is something nobody's even looked at. Here, the whole ecology that's underneath the wind turbines, or within 3 miles of the wind turbine, is being affected by them. Plus, they're ineffective and inefficient to use on ridgeline. They're designed to be built out in big open fields, in the desert, or in areas where they're unobstructed by structures or by the geography of the area.
All right, getting into a little bit of energy policy there with Brooke Page. He's a candidate on the Democratic ticket for governor. He's also running as a Democrat for attorney general. Brooke Page, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
It was absolutely my pleasure. I wish we had more time.
Tomorrow, we're going to continue our series of political interviews with gubernatorial candidate Peter Diamondstone. He's running on the Liberty Union ticket. Also on the program, a spectacular coincidence. One tiny songbird was caught and banded in the Dominican Republic by Vermont biologists several years ago. Now, the same biologists have caught the same tiny bird here in Vermont. We'll hear that story tomorrow on Vermont Edition. Our program is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sage Van Wing, with production assistance from Tim Johnson and Catherine Hayes. Neil Charnoff directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen, and our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.